voluntary basis. But as you may have guessed by now, I am not particularly enamored with the concept of labeling things moral or immoral. I don't see any purpose to be served by it, and of course there is no point here right now in trying to identify whether an increase in happiness was obtained by voluntary or coercive methods. As we talked a little bit about last week and will continue to do throughout the course, we can see that anything that is obtained coercively is going to be probably very fleeting and is going to have severe reactions and bad consequences to you. But the point, of course, again, is that the happiness is the same, even though the durability might not, although we must recognize that the happiness one obtains from an exchange that was coercively imposed may be filled with the mixed emotions or the uneasiness of the feeling of immediate retribution about to come on him and so forth, which may prevent entirely the feeling of well-being from taking place. I don't know. That would depend upon the individual's own structure. Mr. Galambo's purpose in injecting a moral requirement was to lay the groundwork for what he believes to be the most just or efficient type of social structure, and that's not our concern here at this point. But we should carry this definition a step further anyway, because an increase in happiness presupposes a change in the situation, not a continuation of the status quo. So this is obvious in an exchange situation where you give up one thing in exchange for something that is of greater value to you, not the same value, but something then that would give you greater happiness, the profit being the increase in happiness. Now, the same thing would hold true where no other individual is involved, where you simply give up one method of doing something for something else with the same resources, the something else that brings you greater happiness, and you profit to the extent that your happiness is increased. But if profit only relates to the surplus or the increase, then it is a mistake to refer to any happiness-producing situation as being profitable, because it may not necessarily involve an increase in happiness, but merely a continuation of the status quo. And to more precisely identify the nature of profit, I'd like to define it in this way, that profit is the increase in happiness resulting from the replacement of one situation by another. If you move from one environment to another where your mental well-being is greater, then you have profited. If you acquire new friends and they produce more happiness for you than the foregone resources would have, then you have profited. And you cannot simply label some continuing activity as profitable simply because it produces happiness for you. But of course you could say it's valuable, it's happiness producing, you could use any one of many other adjectives. Now, it could be said that profit is the difference between the happiness received minus the resources expended. But since happiness and resources are not the same thing, it would be almost unworkable to try to make such a comparison. Even the definition of efficiency that I gave in the first session, that efficiency is the ratio of happiness produced to resources expended, presupposes some kind of a system of measurement. And there is such a system of measurement, which would have to be applied in every instance of a decision being made. And the measurement system is the evaluation of happiness received against alternative possibilities that are actually and realistically available to the individual. The most efficient course of action is that which produces the greatest happiness for the least resources of the alternatives that are available. And always the only standard of measurement that the individual has is how could I otherwise use these resources to greater advantage to myself? Because his resources are limited and he is using all of them at any given time. Even a man lying in a hammock is using his time and energy and knowledge in the best way he can conceive of at that moment. His resources are not idle. A man who has $1 million sitting in the bank, even if it were not drawing any interest, is still using those resources in the best way he can think of. They have a value to him there. It is not that the money is idly lying in the bank. It is there and it is serving a very real purpose in his mind at that time. So the individual is using all of his resources at all times. And the question is there any better way that I could use them? And this is the only measurement that I can make. Now, getting back to profit, if there's such a thing, then there would also have to be such a thing as a loss. And of course, strangely enough, the definition of loss then comes out to be the decrease in happiness resulting from the replacement of one situation by another. And of course, this could come about in as many ways as profit could. You can lose the job that you decided was your best possible alternative. A thief can give you your choice between giving up your money or your life. Now, Mr. Galambos referred to this as a false alternative, meaning that even though you are apparently making a choice, coercion has deprived you of the opportunity to profit from either course of action that is now open to you. But I would call this a very real alternative. There is nothing false about it at all, because reality is, and you will always have to